Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the program. Clint, up. Thank you. Welcome into the program. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. It's our anniversary show. Did y'all know that?
Yes, it is. 1 year ago, we started.
That's amazing.
And, of course, Clint has Happy Birthday already queued up.
Oh, that's why you got here early? Okay.
No, I forgot to tell him.
Oh. Well, he can do it quickly.
Anyway, show's been on for a year. We've had a lot of fun. Hopefully you've had a lot of fun listening to it. And hopefully that will continue tonight with our guests starting at 6:30. Former USL catcher Ken Myers and former South Alabama pitcher John Lieber, who also threw, I guess, about 9-10 years for the Chicago, or in Major League Baseball, and a good many of them for the Chicago Cubs. They're going to join us tonight with one particular thing in mind, and that was, I guess, the last major brawl that UL or USL ever had on the baseball field, at least that I can remember. You know, I don't count that Clemson skirmish during the World Series, College World Series.
No, it didn't measure up.
As a brawl, no. A couple of players who didn't care for what happened and got into it a little bit. The brawl between the Cajuns and Jaguars measured up. And while Myers wasn't part of the initiation of what happened, Lieber was. And we'll talk about that with them, and I think it'll be a lot of fun moving back. There are some other things we're going to touch on tonight, including Tom has brought us information on the LHSAA and what they've done recently, and they're always doing something. And we'll see if anybody agrees with what they've done this time around. Meanwhile, oh, I know what I wanted to mention.
Yeah, and he brought a Yellowstone update, too.
So. We're going to hold that until about, 9, 10 o'clock. But, yeah, Tom will have his Yellowstone update. I want to mention yesterday, you know, we have lunch at Prejean's, the five of us do every Tuesday. And I should also mention that Bobby Ardwin is not here with us tonight. Bobby, of course, is covering one of his 250 parish council meetings.
Per week.
Yeah, that he has this year. He's doing that tonight. So it's Bruce Brown, Glenn Quibido, Tom Brown, and I'm Don Allen. We're going to be holding down the fort for you. I want to throw a special shout-out because yesterday we have lunch at Prejean's every Tuesday. That's something this fivesome does. You know, we enjoy it. Nancy is the lady that waits on us at Prejean's. We've developed a pretty cool relationship with her. You know, we enjoy the food. We enjoy the time out. And while I was on my way there for the 12 noon, I had a blowout on I-10 near the I-1049 intersection. And I was in trouble because I'm at an age, I'm driving this like ancient Yukon. And the spare tire is located underneath the truck. I'm in an age where I can no longer facilitate that physically. And so I call the people that do the my tires, and the last time they sent out someone, you know, with and changed it on site. They don't do that anymore because of insurance problems. Mm. So he said, you probably need to call a tow truck. And I'm thinking, holy cow, I don't want to call a tow truck. The tire's going to cost enough. And even called a friend that I used to work with at Moss Motors. He's now at another dealership. He's in North Carolina right now.
That's great.
He said,
you'd be late coming.
He said, I can send someone, I can call and send someone to you. He said, no, I got this. And about this time, this white pickup truck stops on the interstate, backs up to my spot, and this guy gets out, and he and his sister, as it turns out, were going back to their home, I think, in in Karen Crow. And he said, do you need some help? And I said, well, yeah. And he says, I got this. And he did. And for an hour, he wrestled with that spare tire, got it out from underneath. The guy is, I think, does a lot of mechanic work, although he's out of work at the moment.
But it was not a balmy day.
Yeah. No. And he laid down on his back, you know, on the cement while these 18-wheelers are hauling by at 70 to 80 miles an hour. And he changed the flat for me and got the whole thing done.
Amazing.
I wanted to throw a shout out. His name is Lance Papillon. In fact, I've got his phone number. Anybody needs mechanical help, you give me a call. I'll put you in touch with him. But Lance, you paid it forward. You saved my day. You were a guardian angel sent down. And I cannot thank you enough.
Yeah, right. Because I was not able to make lunch yesterday. But what you failed to mention was not only are you incapable of changing a spare tire, but the rest of us would have quite a hard time in the 95-degree weather changing a spare tire for you.
Well, I know Glenn's had back surgery, so there's no way he was going to be able to do that.
Geriatrics Club.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yes.
I cannot
thank him enough. Actually, I did thank him in a particular way before he left.
Yeah.
I gave him some thanks, but I cannot thank him enough for what he did.
There's still some good people in the world.
Oh, there are, just when you least expect to find them.
Well, I figured somebody was going to stop. And
man, I didn't.
I did.
Oh, no.
Somebody will stop.
Somebody will, yeah. It might take a while, but eventually the right person will pass you and they will stop.
Somebody will stop. Oh, yeah. You know. I firmly believe that. It may take a while. Bruce, you remember the time we were going to the conference preseason?
Yeah.
And your timing belt broke outside of Baton Rouge, and we sat out there for a while. We eventually, somebody did wind up stopping and helping us, and we had to tow it into Port Allen and get it fixed. Oh. But we still made it in time. We still made it in time to, what was it, Biloxi or Gulfport for the conference. But somebody did stop, and it was like three or four. It was me, you, Dan, maybe. Or who? It was three of us. Yeah.
Particularly on I-10 because you've got a lot of working people, you know, and oil field people, big strong guys driving back and forth in company trucks. Somebody will stop and help you.
Yeah, you don't want your timing belt to go out, trust me.
We have a phone call.
You're out to see the wizard, the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, we got him, Al, on the line.
All right.
Hey, Al, what's on your mind? Yeah.
Gentlemen, if my memory serves me correctly, wasn't Tony Robichaud as a player involved in a fight with McNeese, or am I just crazy?
Yeah, no, you're correct. That's when Brad Kelly was coaching the Cajuns. But
okay.
That happened before the South Alabama USL brawl, which happened in 1992.
Okay.
Yeah, but Tony was playing for McNeese.
Okay. He was playing for McNeese at the time.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, he was playing for McNeese.
Okay. But he finished his career at UL, correct?
That is absolutely correct. He coached at both schools. In fact, he's a leading coach in terms of wins at both schools.
Yeah, it was six seasons at McNeese? Is it six, I think, he was at McNeese?
Yeah.
Okay, six, I just want to bring that up. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, if you're into brawls, tune into the show at 6:30 when Ken Lieber joins.
You know, he mentions Tony. I was talking to Tony's dad the other day, and Crowley this year, like we talked about the last show, made a really good run in the American Legion State Tournament, and we were trying to figure the last time a Crowley team had done that well. And he said when Tony played American Legion baseball, him and Timmy, that was they changed the format. It used to be you'd have a winner in the South and a winner in the North, and the two would play, or East-West or something like that. And now it's a tournament where 10 teams come in from around the state. And he said Tony and them wound up playing, I think it was Shaft Brothers of New Orleans. He said, Glenn, we go to New Orleans, and he said Tony pitches. And I didn't quite understand if they won the game or not.
Didn't they lose the game? But hadn't they lose it 1-0?
I think it might have been 1-0. And then, but he said on that team, he said, you remember that guy that played at Mississippi State? And I said, Will Clark.
Yeah, you told the story before.
I did, yeah. He said, Will Clark was 0-for-4 against Tony. And he said, the next night they come to Crowley, and he said, somebody else was pitching and stuff and whatever, and he said, man, they were hitting balls out the field like popcorn. You know, but Will Clark had a big supporting cast back then as well. But, you know, for Tony, the whole Will Clark, the 0-4, man.
His Mississippi State teammate, was that Rafael Palmeiro?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's no talent on that team at all.
How's that for three and four hole hitters?
Well, what did they call that? Did they call it Thunder Lightning, or what did they call it? They called it something like that.
Yeah.
Where?
Cause, they had a catch name for it, yeah.
Yeah, they had a catch name for it. I mean, they had people, you know, out in the pickup trucks all around the field and everything. And yeah, did you ever see that special on ESPN on them?
Yeah, that's a good special.
Oh, it's a great special.
While they played at Mississippi State, you mean?
Yeah, it was about them playing at Mississippi
State. Their legacy at the school.
Yeah. It was, it was
pretty
great.
Pretty revered. Yeah.
So if you get a chance, I guess, I know you call that up on demand or whatever, but those were two special players, man. Law of mercy.
You won't find many college teams that have two hitters of that caliber on the same team at the same time.
Yeah. And I imagine two Eagles at the same time. I know Will Clark had one, supposedly.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. That's the story.
Andy Fox played for USL back in the day. In fact, Andy played during the 91-92 season, which we're going to talk about with Myers and Lieber.
Mm-hmm.
Fox patterned his swing after Will Clark.
Oh, he had a beautiful swing.
It's a good model.
Oh, I mean.
Beautiful, long,
yeah.
Not fast, not slow,
mm-hmm.
but he patterned his swing.
But baseball guys out there will tell you, though, I don't think I've ever seen an ugly left-handed swing. I don't know what it is, but, I mean, a left-handed swing is a beautiful swing. You know, I saw a guy yesterday, and I was telling about his grandson's play, and I said, yeah, and I said, little something gun bats left-handed. I said, we're going to tie my grandson's one arm behind his back. And make it. He said, Glenn, he said, as soon as he started, first thing he did, we put him on the left side. And, I mean, that's what you want to do. You want to have, if you're going to, you know, train a kid, you want to have him hit on the left side. But Will Clark's, I mean, he was a model for all swings. But I've never seen a bad left-handed swing.
I have.
You have?
I've watched enough Yankee baseball.
Oh,
and it's not necessarily who they've got, but who they play against.
Yeah.
And if you watch enough baseball, you'll really see some awkward-looking left-handed swings.
Yeah, but some of the pitching can make them look awkward.
This is true.
Some of the pitch. But a natural left-handed swing is a lot prettier than a regular right-handed swing.
The only exception I would make with that would be Ichiro. Now, what Ichiro was trying to accomplish is different from what most hitters were
trying. He beat it in the ground and tried to run it out.
And he beat it in the ground and would run it out.
Yeah. Willie Mays Hayes.
Yeah, and you know, and that's what they teach in softball, right, Tom? I shouldn't have brought
softball.
Softball
swings a whole different. Softball's a whole different swing.
Here it comes. You know?
Sure it is.
It's a different swing.
But
your slappers are just like you were saying. They try to slap it in the ground and beat it out.
Right.
You don't see many long swings in softball. But the ones that you see hit it a long way when they connect.
Yeah. It's a more compact swing. It's more, you know, the three elements of the swing. You know, it's using the hips, turning the shoulders, and keeping the arms kind of like in a V with the bat and close. You know, where you get the whole power motion as you come around.
Man, you know what? Now watch his face when I say this. I'm missing two things I'd love to watch by being here tonight. One of them's Yellowstone. Y'all all know that. But you know what else is on tonight? And, man, it's killing me not to watch it. His face is going to go like, oh, jeez.
Alien abduction?
No, better than that, almost. Little League Regional Championship game between Louisiana and Texas. And I watched the semifinal the other day.
Want me to tell you the final score?
It's over?
Oh, yes.
Today?
Yes.
They played that right? I thought it started at 6.
No, that's a replay.
Wait, let's ruin everybody's, Wednesday
hold
night.
Hold on. Who won it? Tell me, Louisiana.
Louisiana.
They did?
First time New Orleans has ever made it to the Little League World Series. What was the final, Clint? Like 6-4? That sound right?
The final was
I missed it.
6-2, 6-2, actually. 6-2. Yeah, this happened earlier today.
I wouldn't make that up. So,
what time was the game?
Look
son
at his
of a
face,
gun.
Not mine.
Yeah. You got to be kidding me. I wanted to watch that game, man.
We just saved you.
Well, you can still watch
your life.
Huh?
Yeah. You can still watch it.
You can still watch it.
We just
2:48 was when the story was up on NOLA.com. So it was around a little after lunchtime the game wrapped up.
You know that's a River Ridge team.
Yeah, River
that's
Ridge.
Exactly correct.
River Ridge. Yeah. Okay, so you know what you're getting right there.
Yep.
You know, but it's the East Bank. And, I, you know, when I first turned it on the other day, I said, what do you mean it's not Lake Charles? Because Lake Charles is in it almost every year
right.
in the regional tournament.
Right.
And so now it's River Ridge.
Yeah,
so
that encompasses first, Bonneville first and East Jefferson
I find
and Rummel.
And John Curtis.
I knew that that's where you were going when you said it. And I'm saying in addition to that, this is
okay.
I'm finding it amazing. It's the first time that New Orleans has ever made it to the World Series.
Well,
I guess they couldn't get out of Louisiana.
No, because you got that bunch from Lake Charles, that Barb-based bunch.
Yeah.
That's they would win it every year. But you look at it.
It's not only that. There's so many more teams in the metro New Orleans area because it's so heavily populated. Whereas you take a Lake Charles team, they're probably pulling a lot of kids from a lot of different teams.
You get chopped up in the New Orleans area.
Whereas in the New Orleans area, you know, they're staying kind of. It's one or two schools, more or less.
Yeah, but you fight in select baseball, too. So apparently they were able to keep their better players. You know, because when guys see that they have a good crop, they'll let them play select and Little League. They'll play them both. And then when it gets to All-Star time, they'll put them on like a Little League team, a Pony All-Star team. And they'll try. That's what Rain did this year, and they won the state championship in Pony baseball.
Yeah, and that way by the time they're 16 or 17, one arm's about 3 inches longer than the other one. Because they're overworked and overtired.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's just too much. It's too much.
Softball's not like that?
It's too
much. Football's not like that?
We're not talking about softball. We're talking about baseball.
What about football?
Turn it up a little bit because your timing, Clint, is superb as one of our guests has shown up here at studios. So we're going to go out and welcome him in. You're listening to Five Guys Stories.
He just wanted to cut us off
on this Wednesday night.
Yeah, we weren't talking what he wanted to talk about. Okay, here we go.
Now, back to Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, it's birthday time.
Ken, just in case you're trying to figure out why we're playing that, this is our first year anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Actually, anniversary show.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing that we made it this far without Bud here in the studios.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact.
Ken Myers is going to join us now, and John Lieber will be with us about 5 or 10 minutes from now. So, Ken, we'll wait until Lieber gets on before we go into the happenings of 27 years ago.
That's crazy, ain't it?
How old are we? I mean, you can think back and remember that stuff that happened that had happened 27 years ago.
Yeah.
We had a guy call up a moment ago, and he said, wasn't Tony Robichaux involved in a brawl with McNeese State? Said, yeah. That was before. That was Brad.
Was playing,
he was a player at McNeese at the time.
Yeah.
Oh, so he was at McNeese and not at UL.
Yeah. Brad Kelly was the coach for UL.
That was at T-Moore, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Brad Kelly.
Brad was.
He's a pugnacious guy.
He's a lot like, he had a lot of the same characteristics as Mike Bollinger. You know, they were out there to make a point, and they were going to do it their way.
He was intense.
Yes.
So Brad was right before Gene Schell.
I guess so. I'd have to go back and look at it.
He went to Miami when he left here, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to somewhere big.
Yeah, he went to Miami, man.
Took him to the World Series.
That was a good coach, man. Yeah. We've had some good coaches come in here. So
he's a very combative coach. I've heard the story about he and the Lake Charles bus driver.
Oh, no. I don't know that one.
It's just a story, and I'm not going to repeat it. But apparently it was intense, as the word might be.
Oh, that was something that happened in the parking lot? Yeah, okay, I know what you're talking about now.
You heard that too?
Yeah, I've heard that one too. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of stories out there about a lot of coaches, so that doesn't surprise me. But, But feel free to jump in at any of this stuff because we scattershoot. This is not your typical sports talk show.
Bo is still one of my favorite USL/UL coaches of all time.
Yeah, because you used to like to party.
There was that, too. There was that too, and of course, when you went to a party with Bo, it's a little bit different. Yeah. Then you went with a lot of other people.
He wouldn't fit in today's climate, on and off the field.
No, he wouldn't.
I mean, even on the field, some of the, you know, his approach. I was talking to Matt Deggs a couple nights ago. We got together. My wife's a real estate agent. She was showing him houses, and when they would get done, we'd all meet for dinner. And he was like, "So tell me about Bollinger." You know, because he and I had talked about Robe over the phone, you know, just kind of shared our stories. And I said, the one thing I remember about Bollinger that's different than anyone else's hitting approach, when we had batting practice, when you missed, he wanted you to miss in the tennis courts. And today they want you to see it long, right center field. His is get your foot down and get it out front, get the barrel out front. And I was telling Matt, I said, there was several games when we'd get runners on base, and Bollinger would sit. Tony stood up next to the bat rack. Bollinger would sit on the other end of the dugout, totally away from everything. And every now and again, he'd get up and walk up the steps and either put on a sign or something. And there's, I guarantee you, 20 of my bats, when I hit in the three hole my junior and senior year, I would see him walking up, and I'd step out the box and look. He said, "Hit one out of here." Now, most of the time you hear coaches saying, you know, "Hey, shorten the stride, shorten it." He was like, "Hit one out of here." And, I mean, as a hitter, that gives you the green. Turn the thing loose. You got three swings. Try to get ahead in the count to get that fastball because your coach wants something long.
Let's see. But Dex isn't going to handle the hitting, right?
Dex is going to oversee the hitting.
How do you think his approach is going to be?
I think both of them are very similar, Jake Wells and Matt Deggs.
Are we talking shorten the stroke and find right and right center field?
I think it's a very physical approach. Is swing early in the count. That's where all the fastballs are.
Yep.
And get if you're not swinging early, try to get the pitcher into 1-0, 2-0 counts so that when you get that pitch, you hammer it. That was Matt's approach. Is don't get up there and take a pitch and go 0-1, and then the pitcher plays offense for a while.
Yeah.
Get there.
That happened a lot in the last couple of years, didn't it?
It really did.
But it happens in all of baseball. And you sit there and you wonder, like, why'd you just take that first pitch fast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why you put yourself in a hole to start off? I mean, every game I watch, I mean, you're going to see it 10, 15 times a game at least. They sitting there taking that first pitch fast. Especially, say, a reliever comes in. He ain't throwing a breaking ball on the first pitch.
No, he's trying to find himself.
He's trying to find himself, and it's like they all sit on it and go like, what's the deal?
And equal to that, Glenn, what gets me is if a guy's looking for a fastball, drawing back to Bollinger, you know, he wants the barrel out front. Guy's looking for a fastball, gets first pitch fastball, and fouls it over the first base dugout. You can't do that. I mean, you can't if you're going to miss – miss out front, miss with the barrel with some authority. Yeah. It's no balls, no strikes. This is probably the one pitch you're going to get to hit in that at bat.
Yeah.
You know, most of the times, and if I missed that pitch.
Put it on the tennis courts.
Yeah, put it on tennis courts. And if it's 0-1, then I know the whole game has changed unless I can get him to 2-1 and get back on offense. Outside of that, I'm trying to use the middle of the field.
How's he going to be with the short game like Tony would love to bunt? How's
I think Tony loved to bunt because the other option wasn't very good.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, but he used that as a weapon. I mean, look how many times he used that successfully
and scored from second base.
Yeah, he even used it like with the Omaha team with all those.
Yeah. Yeah.
I call them hoodlums. I mean, that was like our guys. You know, that's some hoodlums in that dugout. And Tony would tell you that when he go out recruiting, he's going to look for some hoodlums. You know, Tommy Clark and these guys. I mean, those guys would pick a fight. I mean, they'd pick a fight with the Batgirl.
He'd fit right in with Bollinger.
Yeah, he would have. You know?
You hear the music in the background. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, John Lieber will also join us along with Ken Myers, who's already here fully going to send on Mike Bollinger, and we're going to talk more on the bowl thing after we discuss this ball. But I think that's going to be fun to talk about. It's Five Guys, Stories and Lies here at 103.7 The Game, 706-0111. That's your phone number at the studios if you'd like to take part. We'll be back.
They're here to tell it like it is and how it was. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
everybody, welcome back to the show. This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Don Allen with Bruce Brown, Glenn Quibido, and Tom Brown this evening. Bobby Ardland could not join us, having huge duties covering the St. Landry Parish Council, which always have. Where are you going, Ken? You just got here.
Oh, okay, that's great.
Don will love this.
Yeah, oh, Pop, what's Popple saying? Because I can't read that.
He might have a chance to call.
That would be great. He is the other main combatant here. Let us welcome in our other guest via telephone from Mobile, John Lieber. John is a former pitcher for South Alabama. He is a former pitcher for the Chicago Cubs. Played for a couple of other teams as well. And now, like Ken, has moved away from the sports industry to make his fortune. John, this is Don. Welcome to the show.
Man, thank you so much, Don.
John Knight, and I've never met John personally. In fact, the closest I got to John was from a press box in 1991 and 1992 when he was pitching for the Jags. And Ken Myers, of course, was a catcher for USL at that time. And what brought this on is I wrote a blog a little over a year ago and touched on the subject of brawls, baseball brawls. And you don't get brawls like you used to, although we've had a couple of dandies in the major leagues this year. Not in college ball. In fact, the two major brawls that I can think of where USL was concerned was the one 27 years ago against South Alabama, and one a few years earlier than that when USL and McNeese State fought on the field. We want to talk about is the 1992 game. John was the Friday night pitcher, and correct me if I get any of this wrong, okay, John? John was the Friday night starter for South Alabama, both in 91 and in 92. The Cajuns and the Jags were in different conferences in 91, and they met in Baton Rouge in the regionals at LSU, and in a loser's bracket game, which USL eventually won 6-3, apparently is where the... Where the bad blood started. Would that be accurate, John?
Yeah, I believe so. I think that's you hit the nail right on top of the head right there. So, you know, going into that game, it was, you know, I didn't know anything about Southwestern Louisiana, but obviously, you know, watching them and seeing the way they played those couple games. You know, they remind us a lot of us, you know, South Alabama. And, you know, we get in that game and you know, they hit us around, I think, pretty good. I think I came in to relief that game and I'm not exactly what I know they whooped up on us pretty good. And, I think what started it all was, you know, I came in to relief, Popo, came up to bat. And
John is talking about Papa Ramos, who was an outfielder for USL. He came from, I think, San Juan, but in Puerto Rico. And he had the typical attitude that you would think. Very, very flashy, you know, very confident, in fact, to the point of cocky. And I'll tell you what, you know, if I was a pitcher, it must be infuriating to play somebody like that. I'd have thrown at him. And apparently John is a pitcher, and John did throw at him.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if I was going to throw at him, I would tell you that right now. But, you know, I think coming into that game, and I think they put up five or six runs in one inning. And then, you know, I hit Papa there, you know, probably their main guy on the team. And, you know, our scouting report, you know, going into the game was, hey, you know, we had, you know, you're going to pitch this guy away or you got to pitch this guy in. And Papa was one of the guys who needed to pitch in. And the one thing about Papa was, at the time, you know, he was on top of the dish. And,
yeah, he was.
You know, and when you're going to pitch in, I mean, you got to make your pitches in. And, you know, I hit him and I know he said some stuff going down the line. I never say anything back, but, you know, it was just, you know, I'm pretty sure they probably thought it was intentional, but it really wasn't. It was just, it was pitch selection, was to pitch this guy in if you're going to get him out. And he's very good with the ball away. Don't let him beat you. And anyway, they go on to whip our butt in that regional. And then, you know, I'll let you finish the story getting to 92.
Yeah, and then we move to the next year, 1992. By this time, USL has joined the Sun Belt. So they're in the same league as South Alabama, and they're meeting in a regular season game in the late part of the schedule in 1992. And you started for South Alabama, and I don't remember who the Cajun starter was. Do you remember, Ken?
The Friday night starter was Gary Hott.
Was it Hott? Okay.
Yes, it was Hott. That's right.
And
that's
Ramos,
right. Yep.
Ramos was a leadoff hitter, and Popo had like 16 home runs, a bunch of stolen. I mean, Cliff Gustafson at Texas called him after a series there, absolutely the best college hitter in baseball. I don't know the complete accuracy of that, but I wouldn't doubt it. I think Popo's the best that I've ever seen USL produce. But again,
no.
His attitude had to be infuriating for you.
Well, you know, I think going into that game, we kind of know what we knew what Papa was, you know, kind of all about. You know, it rubbed on us like it was cockiness, and you know, it is what it is.
It
wasn't going to affect the way I was going to pitch. You know, and you know, we're going to go to that same scouting report. You know, he's right on top of the dish. We're going to pitch this guy in, and don't give in, and obviously don't let him beat you. So I don't know if it was the first at bat, it could have been, or maybe the second at bat, but you know, I hit him and you know, he takes his base, didn't say anything. And you know, I know the fans weren't very happy about that. So, and then we get to the third at bat or whatever. It was the next at bat after that. Man, I drilled him again, you know. it wasn't a pitch like, you know, and Ken, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think it was anything up towards the head or I think it might have been.
It was a
butt shot. Yeah.
I got the video. It's a butt shot. it was a fastball in, and you had that wicked arm side run. And it started off on the inner half of the plate, and Popo turned his back, hit him on the left cheek, and it was off to the races.
Yeah, you know, and I swear to this, man, when I hit him, I just dropped my head, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And then the next thing you know, I hear, I don't know if it was my catcher or somebody yelling, and he gets probably, you know, I didn't realize he was charging the mound, you know, and I looked up, he's probably just right in front of the pitcher's mound before the dirt. And then all of a sudden, man, he just went towards like the first base side. And then like three of my teammates were chasing him. And then that's just when all hell broke loose. And, I just kind of, you know, I don't know. I was running around or trying to pull guys off or protect guys. But I never did get punched. So, but I know a few guys in that series. Man, there were some haymakers, and I know Ken can contribute to that. You know, telling that story. But man, it was just crazy. It's, you know, out of all the years I've played, that's probably the best brawl I've ever been in. I've been in some, you know, some ones in the big leagues, but nothing like that. That was just crazy. So. But yep. Man, it just brought back a lot of memories, and you look back and you know you gain a lot of respect for teams you play against, and obviously, you know, Southwestern Louisiana was one of them. You know, I mean, you know, it's kind of a rivalry thing, and one of those teams you hate, but you respect them. You know what I mean? And you just know what they're going to bring to the field every day. And you know, what's an attitude? It's like an attitude with us. You know, we go out there and we're expected to give everything we got and play hard and play the game the right way. But, you know, we're going to get after it. And it just, you know, just two teams remind me of one another.
What do you remember most about the brawl, Ken?
I've been in a few fights in my life. This was not a brawl because I've seen some base brawls. This was a street fight where there's 20 on 20 and everybody's getting licks in. There was no one walking around. We knew what was going down. Okay, we knew John was an aggressive pitcher. He liked to pitch inside. And we hated South Alabama because they looked just like us. And Papo Ramos is the typical player that everybody hates except his teammates. When a guy like him is on your team, you love him. It's like, what's the guy, Charles Oakley in the NBA?
Yes.
You know, these troublemakers, Bill Laimbeer, hated by everyone. We had Papo Ramos. And he hit his that senior year, he hit 365, 18 home runs with 35 bags. And he hit in the one hole. You want to talk about bringing the boom?
Yeah, we're not talking a three or four home
hitter.
We're
I hit in the three hole. I had like 8 home runs in the three hole. We put our best hitter first. And I remember that brawl. I had, if you watch the video, you could see me running onto the mound with my shin guards and my chest protector on. I don't know. Papo couldn't have been the first hitter because normally if I'm going to bat in that inning, I'm hitting third. I would have taken everything off. So I don't know if it was just the anticipation of John's probably going to hit this guy again, and we know that Papo's going to the mound. They don't know this, but if he comes close, Papo's going to the mound. And as I don't know if it was the first pitch. I mean, he just sticks one on him. And when I looked up, Papo was halfway up there, and Lee Cantrell ran out like he stole something. And Lee was the first guy on the mound. And I remember getting to the mound and, like, getting in the pile. And it's like everything is so fast and furious. You ever been in a car wreck where you kind of black out? There was licks being thrown in that pile. You could hear just fists hitting. So finally I see I roll off of the pile and I see another pile starting there. So I run to that pile. Gary Haught is on top of somebody twice his size trying to hit him, and the guy's holding his hands. And then finally they just start hitting each other. I turn to the side to try to make sure I'm not going to get hit. And Paul Bacco is squared off with somebody in front of first base, and Coach Kittrell is hauling butt to try to stop them. Well, Paul ends up hitting the guy. I didn't hit him hard, but just kind of hit the guy. The guy slips, and Kittrell is running, and the guy slips, and takes Kittrell's legs out. He falls down. I just remember at the end of that fight when we got in the dugout, everybody had blood.
Really?
Now, that wasn't scratching. This was
was crazy.
This was hatred squared.
What people don't remember is that if you look at the record book after this game, and I don't think John remembered it either, South Alabama won 16 in a row.
We couldn't
USL.
Beat them. We couldn't beat them.
16 in a row after that.
We couldn't beat them.
That's just crazy.
We could we in 19, you know, after that game in 1991, we went. I'm trying to think the year after I played, because they got us. I think they got us 2 out of 3 at our place, and then the next.
Well, that would have been 92 then, because that's where the brawl took place.
Okay, so that's 2 out of 3, and then swept us the following year, because I was finishing my degree GA, and we went to South. Just could never beat them. Just could never beat him.
We need to take commercial break. John, we're going to be back in just a moment. Hang with us. This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Special guests Ken Myers and John Labor will continue after this.
The viewpoints heard on this program could be considered politically incorrect.
Good thing they're too old to care.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. We're taking you back 27 years to the USL South Alabama brawl that took place here in 1992. Special guests John Lieber, former pitcher for South Alabama, and Ken Myers, former catcher for the Cajuns. John, let me ask you something. I don't mean to run away from the brawl, but you pitched in the bigs for what, 9, 10 years?
I think it was 14 years.
Oh, okay, my mistake. Nice research on my part, yeah. a lot of it for the Cubs, and I think that's where most people remember you from, was when you were throwing for the Cubs.
I think so, yes, sir, yeah.
Were those your best times in baseball?
I believe, I started out with the Pirates. I was there for 5 years, and, I think that's when they were in the rebuilding process, and then was traded to the Cubs. And I think, kind of hit, probably the peak of your career during that time. And, just things really just started to click over there in Chicago. And it's the first time I made the All-Star game, first time winning, 20 games. And, it was just everything was just falling into place. So, great city, great fans. Just enjoyed my time there.
Is it playing at Wrigley? Is it everything that as a kid you dream of?
Oh, man, absolutely. I mean, if there's people out there listening and, they love the, the game of baseball, and you've never been to Wrigley Field, you need to go. It's absolutely amazing. It's it's a ballpark that's
we've all been there. So I mean, but being a player on the field, because as a kid, I know my grandson. I mean, he's just enthralled with watching the Cubs and playing on that field. And So it's everything as a kid that you dream of, obviously.
Absolutely. There's no question.
Do you have any thoughts on the way Major League Baseball is? Well, let's start off with this. So the baseball's juiced?
You think?
Man, it's, I really don't know. I think, and Ken, if you got any input on this, just let me know. But here, I think, pitching inside was a huge part of my game. I'm not a guy that threw 95, 96. And I think, today's players, pitchers especially, have no feel for pitching. It's just, we're going to find the guys that throw the ball the hardest and can get it around home plate, and we're just going to run with it. And I can't even stand watching today's game because it's a joke. Because, like I said, pitching inside is a huge part of keeping the hitter honest. They're going to get hit, but you've got to protect the plate. That's one thing I've always been taught, from college baseball through the minor leagues through the big leagues. And when you take that aspect away from a pitcher, you really got no chance, especially for a guy like me that was throwing 90 to 92. Luckily with a little bit of movement, but, how dare if I come inside and it's not even close and you're going to, give warnings to the teams because, you can't pitch inside like this. And I think hitters are more comfortable. You take away the inner half of the plate and just sit on something outside. And I think that's what's going on.
You agree with that, Kyle?
I totally agree with it. I mean, that's today's game has become so analytical that it's built upon spin rates, and you get these middle relievers. I'm a avid Astros fan, grew up in the Astrodome, and you watch these guys, Rondon, and come in at 98, 99, but they're throwing the ball in the middle of the plate, and you wonder why this guy's not the Friday night starter or the week, and it's because he will not control the inner part of the plate. So the hitter has no risk. He can dive in. I mean, you look where Jose Altuve stands. You ever see where his stance is?
Absolutely.
He stands in the
back, good example.
So far back away from the plate.
He stands. It's close to left field.
It is, because he can dive in.
Yeah.
I guarantee you let somebody like Lieber, who has, 92-mile-an-hour fastball with good arm side, run into the righties, you let him start one off on the inner half and ends up on his fingertips, and he's got to change his whole approach to hitting. Whereas today's hitter, look at George Springer. George Springer spins himself in the ground every time he swings. There's no risk to anybody throwing at him. When's the last time you see somebody knocked down? And when they do, the benches come out because you can't do that anymore. That was a big part. Yeah. If you remember Gary Hott made it to the big leagues with the Oakland A's.
Uh-huh.
Gary didn't throw 92. Gary threw 88. But Gary threw fastballs on your hands, and then he had a big league curveball. If Gary Hott would have thrown the ball in the middle of the plate, he got killed.
That's not true. And
at any level, basically, one time through the lineup, anybody with any ability, they're going to gauge you if you're just throwing it down the middle of the plate. And they're going to catch up to you.
That's exactly right.
You know, and it's going somewhere.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And what I was going to say, that's taught early. Let me say this. It's not taught early to kids in the youth leagues. They're not told throw inside.
No.
It's rare you're going to see one like that. I have a grandson. That's where we work. It's on the inside. Mm-hmm. You know, I have one of Tony's plates, blue, red, yellow.
Yeah.
We work on the blue. And that's what I tell them. I said, if you put it on their hands, they're not going to hurt you. But it's not taught. It's kind of like change-ups. It's not taught.
Yeah, you're 100% right. But from a hitter's aspect, let me tell you something. When I walk up to the plate and I'm hunting fastballs early in the count,
mm-hmm.
and I get one between the black of the plate and my cup, it makes me think about my next swing.
Oh, yeah.
It changes your whole approach rather Absolutely. Than yeah. a guy going up there throwing fastball down the middle to get ahead and me swinging out my shoes. If that guy throws first pitch fastball on the inner half or inside of that, I've changed my whole approach because that ball's on me.
Well, they've taken all of that away from the game.
The whole thing.
And a perfect example of that was years ago. I know Don doesn't like to talk about anything but college and pro. But in the youth leagues, it was up at 13, 14 years old. A team from Crowley was playing a team from the Rio Grande Valley. And those guys from the Rio Grande Valley were killing everybody. And the coach from Crowley told his pitcher, first pitch of the game, I want you throwing it inside.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He nailed the batter. All right? The rest of the game, that team from the Valley, their step was to the outside. They were stepping out of everything, and they won the game. You can't do that anymore.
No.
John, before we go away, let me ask you something. Do you still follow Jags baseball?
I follow the news, but as far as, you know, watching a game, I can't watch a game. It just drives me nuts. You know, I can go on with the strike zone, too, but I won't. So it's just, you know, I don't know. It's just completely different. They're changing the whole aspect of it. They're bringing in people that have never played the game before and putting them in charge and control. And, you know, I just don't like it. I just don't like where it's going.
John, I cannot thank you enough for joining us this evening.
Man, it's been a lot of fun. It brought back a lot of memories. And, Ken, thanks for being on, and good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, you too, man. Let's do this again. Maybe when the Jags come to town.
I was thinking.
Next time, have a little reunion.
Right. Hey, let me know. I'll make the trip over. That would be awesome. Okay.
You sound like a pretty nice guy. We won't hate you. We promise. Just because you went to South Alabama, we won't hate you.
I got to give you guys. You know, I got to give you all the respect. You guys have been to Omaha. We haven't. So
there you go.
That's one thing you got on us.
That's 19 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow,
John. Thank you so much again. We're going to take a break here. This is fine.
Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
Hour number two of our anniversary program. John Lieber's not with us anymore. He has gone back to... living life in Mobile. Cannot thank him enough.
Good guy.
Joining us tonight. Yeah, it was a lot
good
of fun.
Good guy.
It was a lot of fun talking to him. Ken Myers, former USO catcher, is still with us, of course. Do we have Popo? Well, we've talked enough about him. Now we get to talk
Poppy.
To him.
Papa. Que pasa, amigos?
Poppy! Poppy!
You guys took me too many years ago, and you know what? For the first time, I can tell you that I kind of love that man, bro. He's not such a bad person at all.
Popo, I actually could have dinner with the guy, and I would have shot a gun at him back then.
We definitely got to do a reunion.
Yeah, that would be great.
Popo, are you in San Juan or in Puerto Rico?
Yes, I'm in Puerto Rico, but I've been here for about a few years now.
You work for?
I work for Homeland Security Investigation, Department of Homeland Security. So we enforce about 400 statutes from money laundering, drug trafficking, child pornography, exploitation, illegal exploitation, importation, a little bit of everything, my friend.
All the things we did in college, Pop.
So he's an expert. That's
oh
how,
yeah, I mean that's
how
a,
got
yeah,
job.
Yeah. That's right.
Hey, I needed a job to really help me out with my anger when I was that age. But John is listening. John, you know we can have some piña coladas. I'm telling you, I really brought it down a few notches.
Papo, I know you had your son played over here. Do you ever get a chance to come to Lafayette at all?
Yes, actually, last year, I went up there for a couple of games. Wow, man, I saw the beautiful stadium. It's exciting. It was exciting to see how much support we continue to get from the fans in Lafayette, though. Tell you what, man.
Do you remember that much about the brawl 27 years ago?
I do. Believe me, I do. I really do. As much as John and Ken, I do.
What do you remember most about it?
That specific game?
Yeah, that specific game.
Well, actually, you know, it went back to a couple of games before. There was really a lot of hate between both teams. And more than likely, I brought a lot of that you know, on myself, the way that I carry myself on the field.
You think? Maybe so.
But it was nothing personal, though, you know? I mean, it's just the way I used to grow up watching Ricky Henderson play. Cool. And a lot of people hated that part of the game. So, for some reason, actually, well, I saw the results too from the fans, particularly when we drove down, you know, to South Alabama. Though, you know, the fans weren't too crazy about me over there.
Cannot imagine why, Papa. you had a great regional the year before in '91 when you were named the regional MVP when USL lost to LSU in that, I think it was a regional final.
Regional final. We had to beat them twice.
And then I remember, was it the next year you went to Texas? And
That's right.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know if you hit the first pitch out, but you were the first hitter, and you hit it over the fence. And Gustafson, the legendary Texas coach, after that series remarked, and I don't know who overheard it. Ken passed the story along to me. Remarked that he thought you were bar none the best hitter in college baseball.
No, I'll tell you what, there was a lot of great competition, you know, particularly in that area, though, you know, Texas, Louisiana. And for some reason, you know, I was very fortunate to play with great hitting coaches. I came from a junior college in Oklahoma. I don't know if you remember that, Seminole Junior College. My coach was extremely tough over there, tough cowboy from that area, though. You know, we used to play 100-something games. It's illegal now in JUCO to play so many games. But I was fortunate to play under him. And after my second year, I was more fortunate that he asked me if I was interested to play in USL. He was supposed to send about four or five players to LSU. He wanted to send about four or five to USL, but he was interested in me actually going to USL. And I told him, Coach, you know what? I can't go wrong. I mean, if you want me to go there, I'll go there. And it was the best decision ever, though, because I don't think baseball has better fans than Lafayette, Louisiana. But you know, I mean, keep this in mind. I'm still in touch with a lot of those players, though. You know. Families, though, you know, I got great friends over there, the Haneys, my wife, family, though, you know, grandparents, they're actually still living in Louisiana, my father-in-law, and it brings me back. My son actually graduated recently over there, and he's waiting to be picked up by the Louisiana State Police soon in that area, too. So, you know, a lot of great things happen as soon as I landed in Lafayette, my friend.
You used a, in fact, the once the colleges went to the metal bat, they stayed with the aluminum bat. But you used a wooden bat in batting practice, didn't you?
I used to. It was it felt good once I switched to aluminum. So it was part of my training. And as well as carrying like a 40, 50-pound dumbbell that has a story behind that. Ken can tell you about that.
One story, Ken.
So we're going to play a two-game set, a midweeker Tuesday, Wednesday at Auburn. And we drive into Auburn the day before the game, probably a Monday evening. And so we all get off the bus at the hotel, and one of the catchers, Robert Turk, who was my roommate at the time,
was the last out, by the way, of the 1991 regional.
That's right. So this was the preface to that. This might have been why he made the outs, Papo. So he goes to take, on the bottom of the buses, they have those compartments that all lift up, and that's where all the bat bags and all our travel bags and everything. So right. Robert Turk goes to grab his bag, and when he pulls it out the truck, Papo's 35-pound dumbbell falls on Robert's foot. So it falls on his toe, and the toe needed to be drilled to let the blood out.
Papo, well, don't laugh at
we
this.
We didn't know this till around 1 in the morning when I was sleeping and I was just here. Robert Turk, who, as you know, they were great football players, and they are grinders. He was trying to sleep while that foot was throbbing and needed to be released. And finally I wake up and just said, "Man, what are you doing in there?" And he tells me, he said, "My foot hurts so bad." And I went look at it, and I said, "Man, we got to call somebody." So there's no cell phones. You can't text somebody.
Right.
So I go to the front desk and I said, "I need the Coach Jagno's room." "Well, sir, we can't give you other people's room." I said, "You don't understand what's happening. I got a guy about to die in the room. He's my head coach." And so anyway, I knocked on the door. Jag wakes up, and in Jag fashion, almost curses me up and down.
Yeah.
"Why are you waking me up?" Well, the short of it is, they ended up starting the bus, getting Turk to a hospital. And he spent the whole night. They drilled him out, and the next morning he was not happy with some Papo Rumbles. He was not happy.
We finally made peace like 2 years ago. Remember we had that dinner?
We had the dinner 2 years ago, all of us together, and Papo stood up and officially apologized, and we almost fell out of our chair. Damon Grossi, Carl Rochelle, it was a great night.
You carried that everywhere, Papo?
Everywhere, but tell you what, that aluminum bat felt like a toothpick in my hand, on my hand. So,
you would do arm curls with it in the hotel room?
Yes,
I used to do like five sets every night, and in the morning prior to the game.
35 pounds.
Well, that may be a lesson to some young hitters out there. You want your bat to feel a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah,
a little lighter. Start working out with 35 pounders every night before you go to bed.
Well, y'all didn't know that he was carrying that around?
Oh yeah, everybody knew. Yeah, I mean we had been on several road trips, but we didn't know it was lurking between two bags. When he pulled one bag, it was loose.
Oh, and it
instead
just
of in his bag,
stove?
So the thing fell. You know, it was not in Popo's bag. It was just kind of on top of it. When he pulled his, that falls on his toe. Wow.
You know what's sad? He was actually on a hitting streak too, though.
So you ruined his hitting streak.
His hitting streak and his toe.
Yeah, I think he was doing. If I remember right, he had got a shot, Papo, in the beginning of that season. We went to UNLV and played in the Coors Desert Classic.
We beat
UNLV the first night. The wind was blowing out, and we beat them 22-5.
I remember that game. Your first baseman, help me here,
Chris Benhart.
Chris, didn't he hit a grand slam and throw the bat in the air and go,
"Yeah,
woohoo!"
Yeah.
Which immediately caused problems with the UNLV team.
Coach Bo loved that.
He instigated that. Yeah, and then the next day we get Oklahoma State, Gary Ward, who is like a top five team, and we might have scored 15 on. That was 91. That was when people, we were rolling up the charts. And then we got, you remember Chris Benson, big league pitcher for Clemson. We get him the next day. And I got hurt. I got knocked out of the Oklahoma State game. I got run over at home plate. Robert Turk gets a shot in that next game against Clemson. and Benson throws a fastball right over the middle, and Turk hits one out. And he got hot, so they DH'd him up until we got to Auburn, until the dumbbell fell on his foot.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, Popo, it's it's confession time now, okay? This is Tom Brown. How you doing, man? That second at-bat against Lieber, did you have it in the back of your mind, if he hits me, I'm going to the mound? Or was it just all?
I went to sleep with that, because the year before he nailed me. So then the first time, so I already said, if he hits me again, actually, I thought it was the first inning. I think it was just opening, I think it was the first or second inning that happened, and it was already in my mind. So definitely, yeah.
And one of the things, Pop, you know, we just talked with John, and obviously he's our age, 49 years old. He's mellow. You know, back in his junior and senior year, he was the best pitcher in the conference, and he knew it. So today he kind of played like Mr. Nice Guy. But, man, he would stare you down, and if he pitched inside and you gave him a look, he would give you a look like, come on, get you some if you need this. So you guys, I mean, it was the perfect storm. With John Lieber
exactly,
and Popo Rubble.
Exactly.
Perfect storm.
And he was right. He was not intimidated. You know, I was hugging the plate like I used to. Mm-hmm. And you want to hug the plate? Well, here you go. So, yeah. You know, you want to do it again? Well, here you go.
Yeah, it was.
You got to give him credit, man. He's one of those tough Southern boys.
It was, look, he owned the inner half of the plate. We all knew that. And, you know, you tried to pinch him in a little bit. And you tried to get him to throw balls to get him back away from you, but he was consistently on that inner half, and his slider was what got him to the big leagues, not his fastball.
Nasty. And I'm telling you, though, you know, that's why I have a lot of respect for that man. That's the way the game was played.
Mm-hmm.
We were very hungry, and, you know, like I said, though, you know, it was just the way that he used to play the game, and we used to play our game too, though, you know. But I have a lot of respect for that man, and God bless him, though, you know, because it was a huge challenge playing against South Alabama, though, you know. For some reason, everybody brought the game at a different level.
Popo, we need to take a commercial break here. Can you hang on with us for a couple more minutes?
Go right ahead, buddy.
Okay, we'll be back with you. Popo Ramos is joining us from Puerto Rico, Ken Myers here in studios, Five Guys Stories and Lies on this Wednesday continues after this.
Now, back to Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
You can't hide your lying eyes, and your smile is in disguise.
You need to find some good Latino music, Wizard, in honor of our guest, Popo Ramos. All right? Okay, good. I'm sorry, Popo. We would have had that right waiting for you, but, you know, we'll have it next time. How's that? Popo, you still there?
Oh, we lost you.
Yes, I'm here, buddy.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, we lost you.
What's the weather in Puerto Rico these days?
I'm sorry?
I said, what's the weather in Puerto Rico these days? Can we expect are you sending us a storm?
It's hot. It's hot, humid, and this is the time of the year, my friend. Though, you know, we are always on high alert in this part of the world.
Yeah, I know. I just thought I'd ask. Popo, Ken said there was what was the story, Ken?
So I forgot to tell John, but early when Popo and I talk frequently, I talked to him earlier today, and he said, "Well, if you get Lieber on the phone," he said, "tell him that the next time he flies, to make sure he gives me his flight number, and I got a buddy of mine at the TSA check-in that he does deep cavity searches, and we'll make sure we send it to him."
I'm going to lure him in for some piña coladas in the somewhere in the Caribbean in a foreign country, and I'm going to see my brother from the Department of Homeland Security do their thing.
He shouldn't be planning any trips to Puerto Rico anytime
no.
soon.
No.
Papa, let me take you back. Let me take you back when you finished at USL. Now, because you went as a senior, you weren't drafted very highly at all, right?
You're right.
And so you had to sign whatever, pretty much, if you wanted to play Major League Ball.
I wrote map and a donut, buddy, and it was the 21st selection, and I signed for $1,500.
Oh, God.
$1,500, and I just wanted a chance, an opportunity. I ended up going to the Northwest League. And actually, you know what's sad about the situation? I started off in the short Class A, and Calvin Murray signed with the Giants the same year, though, and he gets to start almost in Double A, buddy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's because he's from the University of Texas, starting center fielder, and goes in the top rounds. Papa was a better player than him, better hitter than him, for sure.
But it was a great experience. I had a great year, though. I think I hit 300. I ended up going after that year, though. I was brought up to the regular Class A in Clinton, Iowa. But I started in the bench. They signed a lot more players, and I wasn't playing. Time went by, a couple of weeks went by, and hey, Ramos, Papo, go to bat. And, I had a couple of at-bats, played like in three games. I think I was in like 309, something like that, and then I get a call saying that I was released.
Oh, wow.
They were going to release me. Yeah, and it was quick. Early in the season, I was in shock, right? Because, I mean, I used to love the game so much, and I understood that as long as you hit, very decent average, then you continue to play. But you know what? I was very disappointed about the game, and it is what it is, though. You know, it was some tough years for me. My daughter was about to be born, actually, and then I was dropped from my health insurance. Back then, I guess, to keep the health plan, it was a Cobra, I believe. Yeah, I had to pay like almost $500-$600, and I was only getting paid like a $1,000 a month. Imagine that.
Yeah.
So, 12 years. But the great people in Lafayette, came up, stepped up the plate. I'm telling you, impressive. The job opportunities, my friends in Generette, Louisiana, in Lafayette. Oh my goodness, though, Mo Haney, oh my God, I can't say more about that man right there, though, gave me the hand, to get back on my feet. Kevin, I don't know if Kevin Boudreaux, I used to work with him in FedEx, and, was another guy that gave me the hand. And thanks to them, I stopped drinking. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm gonna be honest, though, I ended up, hitting the alcohol for a little while, frustrated about everything. People like that, really, man, they're going to stay in my heart forever because I had to understand that baseball was not all. And thanks to my mom, God, obviously, and I was able to overcome that situation. It is what it is, my friend, though. I guess we learn, right, throughout our years. And I look back, and if I got to, tell those kids, I think baseball or any sport, it's everything. It's not. It's really not. It's just a way to enjoy an activity, learn, make friends out of those opportunities. And that's richness in life that a lot of people don't get to see when you focus in a specific way about the game, though. It's actually a game. It's a game, but we deviate ourselves, and we just think it's a different phenomenon, a different thing, though.
Well, we all grow up at some point. Some takes a little bit longer, like Don, but we all grow up at some point in our life. It certainly sounds like you have really guided yourself into a pretty good path working for Homeland Security. So congratulations to you.
Papa.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, buddy.
Are you involved in baseball at all in the islands?
When I was assigned in Mexico, I ended up playing like 4 years ago. Very interesting league, tough league. After that, 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I ended up being transferred back to Puerto Rico, and I haven't played the game since. So I'm not even coaching. I don't get to see a lot of the regular season games. I'm one of those now that kind of wait until the end of the season to see the games.
Okay, Papo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me to this show. I love you guys. We'll stay in touch, Ken, as well as you guys, all right?
Thank you. Really enjoyed having you. Thanks.
Thank you, Papo.
All right,
Papo. Gracias, amigo. We're going to take our commercial break here. Papo Ramos has joined us by phone from Puerto Rico. We'll be back with Ken Myers and us four old guys on Five Guys, Stories and Lies. 103.7 The Game.
They're here to tell it like it is and how it was. This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Gotta get myself off the side of the road.
About a half hour of the program left.
If people could just hear the talk in between the breaks.
Come on, Ken, you can't tell that story?
Which way?
Which way?
We'd have to have we'd have to be on Sirius or something like that.
No, we don't.
We just take, just use gentle language.
Yeah,
tell it,
just gentle the language down. Oh. And say, instead of saying that, it's darn. You know, I realize it uses, but every time you use the word darn, you put your own word in there.
Yeah, you fill in the blank.
Yeah.
Well, I know Papo's listening, so I'll tell one of those stories. I'll tame it down. Papo and I were leaving the dressing room one day. We were a little late for stretch. We were getting a little treatment. And when we got to the field, if you can envision, the team was like in lines stretching out in left field in fair territory. And when we walked onto the field, there was two guys standing screaming at each other in foul territory. So Papo takes running because the team was just standing up watching. And there was a confrontation of screaming loud profanity, and nobody was going to break up this fight. So Papo starts running. I drop all
that
my
really
stuff.
That really wasn't a physical fight yet.
Not right? yet. Yeah. They weren't. They were just screaming. And when we got to them, I'm jogging, so when I get past third base, I recognize it's Bollinger, one of the guys. And when I look to the other guy, it's Andy Fox. And we got to him, we separated him, and Bollinger screaming at him, and, you know, come get you some, I'll knock you out, and so many words, right? Andy screaming, you lied to me, you M this and that, bleep, 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 just bleep. So finally we got him separated. And in talking to Andy, this was like maybe 2 weeks into the season, and Andy started like 0 for 20. Had a really slow start. Beautiful swing, and ended up having a great career, but yeah. he had a slow start.
It's the Will Clark.
Will Clark, John Olerud, yeah. these long, fluid swings, right. and he just was having trouble with the timing. I think maybe the ball was getting on him a little quicker at Division One. So Bollinger was sitting him out that next day, and Andy said, I'm not sitting down. and that almost went to fighting. And the funny thing is that the next night when we get, you know, you come out the dressing room, you walk in, everybody checks the lineup card. You want to see if you're on, where you're at, and who's playing, and who's this. And sure enough, I'm in the three-hole, Fox is in the four-hole. And Andy hits a home run that night and never sat again. And it just, that was that team.
But you said he had committed to Arizona State, and that's why he was so upset. Because he would come here to play, not to sit.
We flipped him late with some improprieties. Some improprieties. We flipped him late, and he was coming here. Yeah, he was coming here to play, and that he knew. I mean, I think Andy hit almost 400 in that junior college. I mean, he was a professional hitter,
right.
But it's just having trouble getting his timing right, and that. But that was that team. It was that attitude that got us to the finals. It was that every one of those players would fight their own coach for what they believed in.
Wasn't it the game against Texas A&M? Fox had a grand slam, and that really opened it up for you, and you ended up scoring like 12, 13 runs.
12 or 13 runs. I think we ended up beating them like 13-8, but his hit was the dagger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I remember. And I remember it was also the regional that – it was so unfair to almost everyone except the local folks because of all the rain delays and all the
I spent 11 days in a hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Almost had to cancel my flight to Cape Cod to play summer league, but we lost to LSU in the finals. And the next morning, I was at Lafayette Airport. I got to Boston that night and caught a game in the Cape.
And you said that was the year that LSU won their first title under Skip?
Yes. That was 1991.
And they walked through it, you said.
Cleaned them up.
If y'all would have won.
And when I got to Cape Cod, Chris Mook, you might remember the name.
Yeah, I remember him.
Chris played in that outfield with Lyle, was a quarterback. And Chris got to us like 2 weeks late because he won the national championship. He was my roommate for the Wareham Gateman. And he told us we were the toughest team they played. Toughest team they played. Now, they were good, okay?
Yeah, they were.
That was Chad Ogier and Paul Bird was a freshman on that team. And, you know, Andy Sheets, Tookie Johnson, Lyle Mouton. And we were up 4-2 in that game in around the fourth inning. And I remember I don't remember if we started DeJesus or Hott, but Hott came in. He had pitched the night before. This was back then where you couldn't stop Andy. Gary Hott. He would pitch every game.
It was probably Hott because DeJesus never lost a game at USL.
Yeah.
And there are some great stories about Javi, too.
Great stories.
I think it took place in Mobile, didn't it? During one of the tournaments? Sun Belt tournament?
Yeah. Which one was that?
Which story?
Yeah.
Oh, his girlfriend and his fiance and his fiance's parents showed up. And so did his girlfriend. And the girlfriend was wearing Javi's jersey.
I have not heard that story in 27 years. That is 100% accurate.
Wow.
And a problem?
Yes, there
Houston,
was
a, we have a problem.
Yeah. It really affected Jesus, who pitched like, I don't want to be here. It was like, I'd never lost a game as a Cajun. And Bollinger got him out of there, and the Cajuns rescued him by scoring late and winning the game. But Javi and the other participants apparently got into it verbally in the motel, one of the hallways there outside of it. Everybody was coming out of their rooms to listen to this because they all knew what was going on.
Man, I remember that. That was the same hotel that after a game, they'd have these little net bags with a tie on it. You'd put all your game-worn stuff in the bag, and you'd go drop it off.
And they'd wash it.
And they'd wash it, dry it, and then your bag would be ready with your number on it.
Right.
And that night, South Alabama had a lot of red dirt.
Yeah.
And the first night, he washed the clothes, and everybody came out in red. So Bollinger sent him to Walmart to buy bleach and a spray gun to bleach them after the Saturday game so that maybe they would get back to clean. And our guy, his last name was Jackson. We called him Action Jackson. Well, Action Jackson, before he went do the laundry, he spread out all the bags.
He was your manager?
He was the manager.
Okay.
He spread out all the bags in the hallway of the hotel and sprayed bleach. And we woke up the next morning, and there's little white circles all on their carpet.
Oh, jeez.
And I remember.
Did the bleach thing work?
I don't remember if it worked. We were all laughing because he ruined the entire whole hallway floor, and they ended up sending the bill. I remember Bollinger said we had to eat the bill.
Oh, I bet.
That was after Javi's debacle. Yeah, that was a great road trip.
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was. I'm pretty sure you didn't win the tournament, but yes, it was.
And you folks thought that there was just ball games being played, right? Whenever there was a ball game?
But they said back when he was there, it was kind of like watching the movie Major League. I mean, wasn't that kind of how it was?
That's because Bollinger treated his players like you would treat a minor league team.
That's exactly how he coached.
Not a college team.
Nope.
Not like Tony, and not like probably 99% of the other coaches in the country. Bollinger was just a little bit different, and as watching and following this team, I loved him. I loved it.
There was an understanding between player and coach. And we knew they had our back, and they knew we had their back. So there were certain times, like at the UNLV Classic we talked about earlier,
mm-hmm.
When Mitch Gaspard showed up at my room at 10 o'clock for bed check, I told him, don't come back. No double checking tonight.
But y'all were fixing to leave.
We were leaving, and we let it be known.
It's Las Vegas.
I mean, come on, Glenn. I'm from Abbeville, man. I mean, I had never been farther than Rutherford Beach, and you got me in Las Vegas. And we had just beaten UNLV, Oklahoma State, and Clemson. And I said, we going out.
Yeah.
And so it was me, Robert Turk, and Paul Bacco, and Damon Grossi. So we thought we would be mischievous and we would sneak out and everything. So we get to, I don't remember what was the Sands Hotel is where. So, man, we ended up crossing the street and going to this big, we kind of wanted to get away from the hotel because we figured the coaches would be out that night. So that night between 10, 11 o'clock and 4 in the morning, we came in. We ran into every one of our teammates. Every one of them.
I thought you were going to say when y'all went to the Sands, y'all ran into Bollinger in the bar.
Well, they were all out, too. But we ran into every one of our teammates. And a funny story, I'll end with this, is that after that tournament, we had a bus ride 5 in the morning to the airport. And Pete Guajardo was our starting right fielder at that time. So we were out all night. Everybody was gambling all night. And Mitch, we had done so well in the tournament. We were ranked like in the top 15th. I said, look, just no double checks tonight. He said, look, Bollinger said, we don't even have to do room checks. So y'all just
don't get arrested.
So fast forward to the next morning. I mean, nobody had slept. We had been up all night. And I'm sitting on the airplane. And Jag's next to me, and Jag goes, boy, it smells like beer in here. I'm just like, well, I mean, it's a flight from Vegas at 7 in the morning. It's not just us.
We just got in.
But Pete Guajardo walks onto the bus, and I remember it like it was yesterday. And Pete actually came in for our alumni weekend, and we told the story again. His wife, I mean, she was buckled over. So Pete comes in, and he sits down, and he called Robert Turk Doug. Turk Douglas was his nickname, so he called. And Pete's still drunk. I mean, he is loud, and he pulls out. He gets in his pocket and pulls out about 7 $100 chips, and he goes, Doug, I killed him last night, Doug. I said, Pete, you have to cash him in. You can't get back to Lafayette, and they cashed him in. So he ends up running to the front of the bus and like, negotiates with one of the flight attendants who was going to be back there, and they gave him, like, $500 for $700 in chips. He had drank all night. He had the chips in his pocket. He was bringing them home.
Like, I'm just going to Hub City Bank and cashing in.
That's exactly right. He had chips from a hotel casino.
Come to Vegas. That's what that is.
You can't make that up.
Oh, yeah.
You can't make that up.
Remember those trips when we went down to McAllen?
Oh, that was
Pan American.
Texas Pan American.
Oh my, yes.
Yeah, right on the border.
And I know there's. Remember, those are like 13-hour bus rides.
Yes, and I remember the bus ride coming back because I made it with them. But we got an early start because the Sunday game was like they finally called it because of the weather. Do you remember that?
I remember we walked across the street to that gymnasium and took showers before we got on the bus. I do remember that.
And they finally called it, so we got to leave a little bit early. But I think you won both games down there that you played. And I remember, was it Mike Gautreau, your reliever?
Yeah, Mike Gautreau.
With a cowboy hat in the back.
Yes.
And nothing else.
Nothing else. Just his birthday suit.
Yes. Celebrating. On the bus.
On the bus. Yeah.
Goodness.
We would have card games in the front of the bus, and Bollinger a lot of times would have, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I guess it's 27 years later,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's 27 years later.
And I'm a little more mature. What we would do in the front of the bus is me and Turk and a few of the other players, Bollinger would turn around in his front seat and we'd all play cards. Well, Bollinger would get a lot of his, we didn't have any money. I mean, my mom would give me like $20 a week for gas money, and I'd end up gambling on the bus. Well, we would kind of hand cards to each other because Bollinger was funding his game out of the bank zip bag, which had all our meal money in it. So that was a good way to get the meal money because a lot of times they would give us a per diem of like $15 a day, and that was $5 a meal. I mean, back then, that could cover you at maybe a McDonald's, you know? And then sometimes we'd get off the bus and they'd say, hey, you only got two meals, so we're giving you $10. When actually, you should have got all three of them.
Should have got 15.
So when we had a 14-hour bus ride back, I was getting my meal money.
Goodness gracious. Hey, listen, off the subject of that for right now, they just had a deal come across. Jonathan Lucroy signed with the Cubs.
Yeah, I knew. He signed earlier today, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. They.
Why'd the Angels even cut him? I thought he was playing well for them.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I know they had some – they had a little strife. New pitching coach was trying to put his – kind of put his deal on it. It's a guy, I think, that had no big league experience, and I don't think they – you know, Jonathan knew how to run a pitching staff. Obviously, he proved that in Milwaukee and in Oakland.
He was out for 3 weeks, you know, because of the injuries he got at the plate. Broken nose and concussion and all. Well, he came back –
Well, they also had him at the deadline. They got the Astros' backup catcher Max Stassi, and that kind of caused them. Hey, we're just going to move forward from him because obviously those injuries they weren't necessarily sure he was going to be 100% in the tail end of the season. Even though, mind you, the Angels have no chance of making the postseason.
Max Stassi
exactly. Can't hit bat in practice.
But hey,
that's what leads me to believe that there was something other than that. Yeah. Max, that you don't sign Max Stassi.
Yeah.
For Jonathan Lucroy. Yeah.
Right. Meanwhile, with the Cubs, I mean, they lost Wilson Contreras, also due to the fact that they traded Martin Maldonado to the Astros, kind of left them the cupboards bare, if you will, heading to that four-game set against the Cincinnati Reds. So why not get a guy like Lucroy, who has experience with some of those guys in the rotation?
Well, he's going to a better situation.
Oh, definitely.
Cubs,
oh,
yeah. You know, without a doubt. Yeah,
it's like John said, he gets to play in Wrigley Field. So I mean, hey,
he might play in the playoffs.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a pretty good gig he's getting right there. So
worked out good.
Might have worked out good. We're not finished.
No,
we just got a break.
Okay. We just need to pay some bills. Don Allen, Tom Brown, Glenn Quibido, Bruce Vaughn, part of Five Guys Stories and Lies minus one. Barbie Ardoin is still sitting. And wrap the tension to the St. Landry Parish Council meeting. And Ken Myers, former USL catcher, has joined us. We'll be back after this.
From your mobile device, just say, Alexa, ask 1037 The Game to play live.
It's so easy, anyone can do it.
For most, there's no place like home.
Can I run away from home?
But not for Ronnie Howard.
I ran away, Gomer. I ran away from home.
You're not sending me home.
You won't run away from home?
Why'd you want to come way out here?
To join the Marines.
How do you feel?
I'm a Marine. We're the best.
Ronnie's real home is MeTV.
I don't want to run away. I changed my mind.
Oh. Watch MASH, Andy Griffith, and Gomer Pyle.
Charter 10, LUS 18, Cox 23, DirecTV and Dish 50. Over the air, 50.1.
Driving is freedom. The freedom to keep moving. To control your destiny and to choose your path. And now, that freedom fits in the palm of your hand. It's called Ford Pass, the only app that gives you roadside assistance, Ford Pass rewards, and now when you buy or lease a new Ford, earn points you can use toward flexible complimentary maintenance that gives you, well, more freedom. Ford Pass, built to keep you moving, built Ford proud. Visit your participating Ford dealership to find out about getting flexible complimentary maintenance when you buy or lease a new Ford and sign up for rewards.
Roadside assistance is included for certain Ford owners and available to everyone for a per-service fee. Ford reserves the right to change program details without obligations. Visit your participating dealer or FordPassRewards.com for program rules and restrictions. Ford Pass, compatible with select smartphone platforms, is available via a download.
Yeah, so much rhythm. Babysitting your kids while they play the jazziest jazz I've ever heard jazzed is totally fine. But what's actually frustrating is the check you're handing me and the days it will take to clear. Next time, just send me money with Zelle.
Night out better. Pay your sitter easily with Zelle. Look for Zelle in your banking app.
Must have a bank account in the U.S. to use Zelle. Zelle is an early warning services trademark.
The viewpoints heard on this program could be considered politically incorrect.
Good thing they're too old to care.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
We have just a couple of minutes left. I think about eight here at the show tonight. Next week we'll be on at 6. And I forgot to look again today, but I think it's just a one-hour show.
1 hour next week, Clint?
I think so.
The Wizard will let us know.
I think the Astros are going to kick us again about 7:10. Well, we can let him look that up. We'll worry about it later.
Are you gonna,
In the meantime, Glenn, it's look time for your out. Yellowstone update.
We have a guest. Why embarrass him?
Y'all watch Yellowstone live?
Do you?
Oh, yes.
Will you please tell him how good a show that is?
Yeah, it's pretty good, Don.
Good. Great.
Don doesn't care. If Don doesn't like it, nobody likes it.
You got 60 seconds, Tom. Go.
Well, the Dutton clan is looking to get with Rainwater and Jenkins and try and work against the
You should
the
know
Bex.
Their names if you're going to get
I do. I do. They know them. And Jimmy won the rodeo with Bronco riding because he needed some money to pay off his gambling. Jamie killed the reporter that was getting ready to expose the Duttons. I mean, killed him, okay, and rip-framed Walker while disposing of the body so that Walker had to leave.
I don't take notes.
Is this As the Cowboy Turns or something?
Yes.
Tom,
yes.
Tom's got a blog about it.
Casey stopped Rip from taking Walker to the airport, which would have been the last anyone would have seen of Walker. And so now Walker's still open to come back later.
Ken knows exactly what we're talking about. It's just you and Bruce. Don't.
And the highlight of the show was when Kelly dragged Jamie into Dutton's office by the hair in the back of his shirt and kicked him.
This is the modern day Dallas.
Yes,
that's what this is. That's the modern day Dallas.
This is addictive. If you don't remember that.
Hey, look. Last week we were talking, and Don liked the fellow on the floor because we had a call late, and we were waiting for him to ask about what we were talking about. And instead, he said, "I just want to thank y'all for putting me on the Yellowstone."
Only four episodes left of this season. So, only four episodes left.
Thank God.
Much better than Yankees baseball.
Never, ever, ever. What's the score on the Yankee ball?
Oh, yeah.
I don't have that up right now, but apparently New York has hit 49 home runs versus Baltimore now. Single season mark against them, one opponent. That's over the course of a season, of course. But I was just more updating what we were talking about earlier about next week's Five Guys Stories and Lies. Actually, it's going to be the same kind of situation next week with them, 1:10 first pitch, 12:35
we got 2 hours.
Pregame yeah. with the Astros. And, oh boy, the Chicago White Sox should be entertaining, to say the least, when it comes to your New York Yankees, Don. They're up 6-1 in the sixth against those Baltimoreans.
Probably six solo home runs.
Now, that is a regular sports talk show right there, what you just heard.
Yeah.
All
statistics.
I mean, we could care less about kind of like
all statistics and updates.
All statistics and like, you know, the H-back. I'll listen to one today. The H-back is here and this one's here and that one's there.
Whereas
like,
we have a Yellowstone update every Wednesday night.
And normally we have a Goodwill promotion, but Blobby's not here. So
the Yankees have played like six games at Camden Yards in Baltimore and have hit 34 home runs going into tonight.
And Don has seen them all.
Most of them. Mm-hmm. I'll watch the review just like you go home and watch the replay of Yellowstone.
That's it.
I'll go home and watch the replay of the Yankee.
Watch all those juiced balls leave the stadium.
Last night I got to bed really late because when I lay down to go to sleep, Major League just coming on.
Oh, me too. You too? I stayed up and watched it.
You got to watch Major League when it's
on. Oh, man, that's a great movie.
You know, you can't turn it off, man. I haven't seen it 100 times.
Oh, yeah, you got to watch Major League.
The greatest line in that movie never made it to the movie. It was used only in the trailer.
Well, how the hell you know?
Because I saw the trailer.
What was the line?
And I went, when I saw the movie first, I was waiting for this line, and it never showed up.
What was the line?
What's his name? Behringer and Charlie Sheen are having dinner in the hotel.
Okay.
Not in the hotel, but they're having dinner in the restaurant. It may have been, I think it was the same time that he saw his ex for the first time.
Yeah, with the guy.
And Sheen was complaining about, you know, the home run that hit off of him. And Behringer said, you know, it's not that big a deal. It wouldn't have gotten out of most parks. And Sheen said, what park would have held that? And he said, Yellowstone.
I did see that.
That's a great line.
You sure went in the movie? Yeah, I did remember that one. Yeah, that was... Yeah,
that's a good line.
That's a great movie, but I'm like you, Tom. I stayed up.
That and Bull Durham, I could just watch over and over and
California
over.
California Penal.
Over.
I never got into Bull Durham.
Well, that ball got out of here in a hurry, huh?
Oh, yeah. Like somebody told him.
Did you ever do that, kid?
No.
You never tipped the bat off?
Tip.
Man, why would you?
No.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't do that, but yeah, in the movie it was funny.
I can see it happening if your pitcher's not listening to you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, big boy, here it comes.
No, that's a no-no.
Did you ever have an umpire come over around and dust the plate, and while he was dusting, tell you if you make another comment about my balls and strikes, you're out of here?
All the time. All the time. But, I was a smart guy. When I ran behind the plate, shook hand, introduced myself, how you doing? And as my pitcher's warming up, I'm talking. What you like?
Because
you never know when you're going to need him.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Ken, we can't thank you enough for joining us
this
tonight.
This was fun.
It was a great show.
You guys do a great job.
Ken Myers, former USL catcher, has been our special guest tonight. We'll be back next week.
And we'll see him at a game near you soon.
Sure, we got a couple hours to work with next week as well. For Bruce Brown, Glenn Clivido, and Tom Brown, I'm Don Allen. Like the song says, take it easy.